Shema Yisrael.
Welcome to the broadcast outreach of Living God Ministries with Aaron Budgen. Aaron discovered Jesus is his Messiah while preparing to be a rabbi. He now teaches for several organizations and is the teaching pastor for Living God Ministries. Strongly distinguishing between the Old and New Covenants, Aaron presents the scriptures from a Judaic and historical frame of reference. Join Aaron now as he reveals the reality foreshadowed and the new life we can now experience because of what the Lord Jesus accomplished for us.
I'm presenting a verse-by-verse study through Ephesians, and in the previous message, I was in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, where it says, "Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma." And what I was emphasizing in the previous message was the beginning of verse 2, which has to do with walking in love. In many cases, people will tend to focus more on verse 1 with regards to being an imitator of God, but I think it's more important to consider what it would mean to walk in love and what would that really involve. And so in the previous message, I was emphasizing the point that we are to walk first in the love of God, the love that he has for us, that we are to receive what he has for us, and in that way, we will have something that we will be able to share with others as we walk in our daily lives. And so the objective remains to be us resting and trusting in what we have received in Christ Jesus as our inheritance as a result of his death on our behalf, the sacrifice to God, the offering that was made as he gave himself for us. And that this is an expression of his love towards us because of what he would be able to accomplish in being able to define and establish a new relationship with us according to the new covenant. So we are to live with the love that he has for us, and that will fundamentally change and transform who we are because we are in a condition when we come into this world being spiritually dead without the life of God within us. We live our lives in emptiness, searching for some sense of fulfillment for the desire of love, acceptance, meaning, and purpose, because we don't have those things. It's only through our relationship with our God that he will meet the deepest needs that we have with regards to those things, and then we will be able to walk in this world and engage this world in a different way. All right, now going back up to verse 1, what I mentioned earlier is that most people will tend to focus on verse 1, and they will say, all right, now listen, we are to be imitators of God. We are to do things, say things, like God would do things, like he would say things. That's generally the approach that most people will take. And that this is, in fact, an imitation. That would be the right word to use in that context. In many ways, a person will be pretending to be someone they are not. In this case, in effect, they're pretending to be God. But they won't say that. They will say that we're going to be like Jesus, you know, like Christ. We're going to be Christ-like. But in the end, you know, Jesus Christ was God manifested in the flesh, and so you have another situation where a person is trying to be like God or to do what God would do. People will use the phrase, what would Jesus do? Well, he would raise the dead and he would heal the blind. That's what he would do. Now, if you do that, it's not likely that I'm going to complain about it or protest what you're doing, but it's unlikely that those things are going to take place. But this is the direction that people go in, and what they will tend to do is they tend to skip over verse 2 and go right to verse 3. The reason why people tend to skip over verse 2 in the sense of walk in the love that God has for you is generally because it's hard to find people who understand the love of God for them. And so the way that they will interpret verse 2 is a follow-up to verse 1, which says, be an imitator and walk in love, which means that if you're going to walk in love, it means you're going to imitate Christ. And then they go to verse 3 and say, these are examples of what is encouraged in verse 1 and verse 2. For example, in verse 3, but fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you, as is fitting for saints. How would this be presented? In the context of verse 1 and 2, they will say it is a continuation of verse 1 and 2 by saying, all right, if you're going to be an imitator of God, if you're going to walk in love, then make sure, according to verse 3, you do not engage in any fornication, uncleanness, or covetousness. And then you will fulfill what is encouraged in verse 1 to be an imitator of God and verse 2 in the sense of walking in love. Now, I personally don't think that this is what Paul was intending to say, but let me say that that kind of a conclusion is not necessarily wrong. I wouldn't suggest that the conclusion or the interest that a person wants to express is necessarily an error, because certainly engaging in something like fornication, doing that towards someone else would not be an expression of love. That would not be the case. And you certainly would not be imitating God when participating in that kind of intimate behavior outside of a committed relationship. And then if you consider the next item that he presents in verse 3 with regards to uncleanness, well, certainly that would not be, if I may refer to verse 2, that would not be a sweet-smelling aroma. You know, if there's some uncleanness going on, then that would be offensive to somebody else. You would not be walking in love towards them. You would not be a good imitation of God in that sense. Covetousness. We could talk about covetousness in the same way that these are supposedly ways in which you can fulfill verse 1 and verse 2. But I don't think that that's what he was intending to say. Again, I will agree that the conclusion is engaging in fornication would not be an expression of walking in love. It certainly would not be an expression of being an imitator of God. I will certainly agree with that. I just think that verse 3 is in contrast to verse 1 and 2, not a continuation. All right, it means something different in comparison with. All right, so going back up into verse 1 and 2, considering verse 3 to be in contrast and not in a continuation, then that would emphasize something a little different in this case. For example, to say that we are to be imitators, walking in love, which means that we are to be living our lives in dependency on God, in dependency on the love of God, that we might receive the love that God has for us instead of the fictitious love that we think we might be receiving through the fornication described in verse 3. In other words, this is a contrast to say that you are to live in the way of the love of God for you, not in the way of sin. This is emphasized by the first word in verse 3, but. You know, but fornication, that's a contrast. In comparison, it's not a continuation. It's not to say this is how you can fulfill verse 1 and 2. Just make sure that you don't engage in any sexual immorality of this nature. That's not what it says, but that's what a lot of people will assert. They assert it to such an extent that they will say that to be Christ-like, if you're going to be a good Christian, just make sure that you're not engaged in any form of fornication or sexual immorality outside the boundaries of an appropriate committed relationship. And I have encountered a significant number of people who relate to me in that way and relate to others in that way. They just simply promote the idea, listen, as long as you don't fool around with somebody else, then you're perfectly fine, you're a good Christian. But we have to keep an eye on you, and we have to keep an eye on these other people, because if you do, well, then you're not a good Christian kind of thing. And it's as if that is the only measure of a Christian, somebody doesn't engage in this kind of stuff. Now, I'm not wanting to encourage people to engage in these kinds of things. I'm just saying that this tends to be a significant emphasis, which is a focus on our behavior instead of our beliefs. It is a focus on the flesh instead of what might be going on in the spirit. And I just don't think that that's what Paul was intending to say here. This is an alternative to verses 1 and 2, not a way to accomplish verses 1 and 2. It is to say that this is the alternative in contrast to how you would be living and walking in love. This is what your other option is. And so don't engage in these kinds of relationships that are outside of the boundaries that God has defined, because of course you're not going to be loving the other person with whom you are engaged with. Don't live in the context of uncleanness, and don't live with covetousness. Now, covetousness is something that no one is going to be able to fulfill. This is one of the Ten Commandments. It's the tenth one. This is the one that the children of Israel felt so awkward about that they told God, that's enough, don't tell us anymore, you go talk with Moses. As soon as he got to the tenth commandment and said, don't covet, they said, okay, that's good, it's enough, we're not going to take any more. You go talk to Moses, Moses will talk to us and tell us the rest of these laws, but, you know, that one is really tough to fulfill if you are going to really be committed to a life of not coveting. These other two really aren't even mentioned in the law so much. There are some laws with regards to marriage and the relationships between men and women, but there isn't anything explicit really about the topic of fornication just in and of itself. Uncleanness is found in many cases, but those are ritual matters for the most part, based on things that happen just in regular everyday life that you really can't avoid very much anyway. And circumstances when you may eat something that you shouldn't eat, or you may come in contact with an insect, stuff like that. Uncleanness, covetousness, you know, of all the laws that Paul could have picked from, these are not that significant in the Mosaic law, with the exception, of course, of coveting, as I mentioned earlier. And to say, let these things not be named among you, as is fitting for saints, this would be a good thing, you know, don't let these things be named among you. But if you do succeed in some measure of fulfilling these kinds of requirements, just because you don't covet does not mean you are walking in love. Just because you have kept track of all the laws related to becoming ritually unclean and you have fulfilled all of those does not mean that you are going to be walking in love or imitating God. And again, just because you're not engaging in fornication and other ways that people may have inappropriate intimate relationships, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are walking in love or that you are an imitator of God. That's why I'm saying this is not a continuation. It is a contrast in comparison. There are two different ways of life, and of course we don't want these things to be named among us because they would be representations of things we don't want. But again, just because a person is not engaged in some form of sexual immorality doesn't mean that they are walking in love or they're an imitation of God or they're godly at all, because these could very well be people who don't really struggle with these issues anyway. They're probably not tempted by such things anyway. And you know, the church is very attractive to people who don't have that much of an interest in these kinds of inappropriate behaviors. It's very attractive for these people because, you know, it's easy to be a Christian. It's easy to get along. It's easy for people to see you as holy and righteous because you are not tempted by these inappropriate intimate relationships with other people. And it turns out that, in fact, the church can become quite a sanctuary for these kinds of people who don't struggle with these intimate issues. can be quite a sanctuary because once they are members of the church, there is a real serious opportunity for a person to build enormous religious pride by comparing themselves with everybody else who might be tempted with these things. And so because the church can be a sanctuary for those who are not tempted by these things, and they relate to others with their religious pride by comparing themselves with these other people, this tends to keep people away from the church, to keep people away from Christianity, because they do get tempted by these intimate kinds of relationships that they could potentially have with other people, that it is a temptation. It is a struggle. It's something that they deal with when these other Christian people don't, or at least as far as we know. And so what happens quite often in the world is that there are a lot of people, and I have encountered numerous people like this, there are a lot of people who just assume that they will never be a Christian, and they will never consider studying the Bible or pursuing the things of God, getting to know Him. They will avoid anything that has to do with Jesus, anything at all. They'll avoid it. They will refuse to participate in it because they are tempted by these intimate, immoral kinds of things. And they don't know how to get past those things, or how to deal with those things, or how to manage those things, or how to even understand the significance of those things, and also to appreciate that those things can be a good thing to have if they are utilized in the proper context. Instead, just because of that alone, they reject anything that gets presented to them concerning Jesus, concerning the scriptures, concerning the love of God. They will just automatically reject that because they don't want to have to deal with all of the enormous religious pressure that will be thrust upon them in a significant way, trying to get their flesh under control instead of getting to know the love of God. And for this reason, among many others, there are a lot of people who don't ever even consider the things of God and what it would mean to know who He is as a person. All right, now back to verse 3, but fornication and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for saints. I would encourage that, absolutely, because it is not productive. It's not functional. It's not something that's going to increase our quality of life, as many people hope that it would. These things take place usually outside of the love of God. Continuing into verse 4, neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. All right, filthiness in comparison with uncleanness. Well, this is a little uncertain. I can suggest that maybe in verse 3 is talking about the ritual uncleanness of the law, and then filthiness would be a little bit more in the category of either vulgarity or perhaps just simply a person who is not taking care of themselves and they are not providing a sweet-smelling aroma to the people around them at all. Those are some possibilities. Continuing on in verse 4, nor foolish talking. All right, now, foolish talking. There is no commandment anywhere in the law, in the law that God gave to the children of Israel, you know, the law of God, there is nothing there that says, thou shalt not engage in foolish talking, nor coarse jesting. These are certainly not fitting, but there's never been any command from God with regards to these things. You know, some people engage in foolish talking and coarse jesting just for the purpose of creating humor, sarcasm, stuff like that, and are not necessarily trying to cause harm to somebody else. There may be a subtlety of contempt being expressed in coarse jesting, but you know, in foolish talking, some people engage in that just for the purpose of entertaining themselves and taking a break from all of the pressures of life. Now, I'm certainly not going to want to encourage you to engage in foolish talking or coarse jesting. I'm just saying that in order to make a comparison with other laws. I mean, of any law that he would choose. If you want to say, this is what it means to imitate God and walk in love, no foolish talking. Is that really what you think he was saying, that he was saying this as a continuation of verses 1 and 2? No, it is a comparison. It is in contrast to say that there is one way of life like this, there is another way of life like that, and you know, the other way of life like that just isn't going to be helpful. Continuing into verse 5, though, he goes on and he says, "For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God." All right, now here, this can be a little bit tough, because if we use the phrase, no fornicator, unclean person, and we say that they have no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ, all right, well then we're going to have to find people who do not get tempted in any way whatsoever when it comes to sexual immorality of this nature. And like I said, there are lots of people who either abandon the faith or won't even get started in it because they know they are not going to be able to get over this topic of fornication and other things that are related to it because they experience temptations concerning these things. Apparently, the church is only a sanctuary for those who don't get tempted by these things in many cases, like I just explained. Same thing with an unclean person. If they don't want to engage in the laws related to ritual cleanliness or uncleanness. Now, what about nor covetous man who is an idolater? Well, who is going to live their lives without coveting? Who will ever accomplish that? And that's the point, is that a person will never inherit the kingdom of Christ and God if we define verse 5 as the criteria by which a person could be saved. All right, so some people may be able to get past the fornication issue. Other people can get past the unclean person issue. But how about coveting? Let's see how you do with that one, right? Well, we'll just call you an idolater. And so if we were to really go in that kind of a direction, there would be no one who would inherit the kingdom of Christ. Why would Paul be stating this? He is stating this in order to exaggerate the point that you have a different identity. You are not one of these people. You are a different person. And that's what he gets into in Ephesians chapter 5, is the issue that you are a different person. That's the contrast in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. He speaks about walking in love, which means, of course, that you need to walk in the love that Christ Jesus has for you, that your God has for you, and that will be reflected in how you walk in your daily lives. And do not walk like the people who you are not. As an example, fornication, uncleanness, covetousness, filthiness, foolish talking, coarse jesting. That's the contrast. He's speaking about two different kinds of people, and for you to remember that you are not one of them.
You have been listening to the broadcast outreach of Living God Ministries. You can hear all of our programs for free through our radio archive at livinggodministries.net. That is, livinggodministries.net. Do help us develop new radio programs and continue broadcasting on this and other radio stations. Send your contributions to Living God Ministries, P.O. Box 38353, Colorado Springs, Colorado 80937. Or use the donation link on our website, livinggodministries.net. That is livinggodministries.net.